Penguin Random House Audio presents The Lily of Ludgate Hill by Mimi Matthews. Read for you by Elizabeth Nolden and Samuel Rukin. For my mother Vicky, a fierce friend, a formidable ally, and a continuous inspiration. The plant was raised from seeds sent by Major Madden some 5 or 6 years ago, but it has only now for the first time blossomed. The Botanical Magazine on the Giant Himalayan Lily, 1852. 1. London, England, June 1862. Lady Anne Devereux flattered herself that she had many outstanding qualities. Chief among them was her willingness to do anything for a friend. And Julia Witchwood was her best friend in the whole world. She had been thus ever since the pair of them had endured a first season together, two unwilling wallflowers, one in unrelieved black and one in over-flounced blue, left to languish, unadmired, at the back of every fashionable ball, society musicale, and amateur theatrical on offer. One disappointing season had followed another in rapid succession. Three altogether. It had only served to strengthen the bond Anne and Julia shared. No longer wallflowers, they were comrades in arms, fellow horsewomen, sisters. Yes, for Julia, Anne would do anything, even face the devil himself. Tucking her folded copy of the Spiritualist Herald more firmly under her arm, she marched up the freshly swept stone steps of the Earl of March's stately townhouse in Arlington Street, and firmly applied the brass knocker to the painted door. Lord March was no devil, but he was currently housing one. The door was promptly opened by a young footman. "Good morning," Anne said briskly. "Be so good as to inform his lordship that Lady Anne Devereux is here to see him." The footman didn't question her identity. Indeed, he appeared to recognize her. And why not? She was herself an earl's daughter, and one of some notoriety, thanks to the conduct of her famously eccentric mother. A widowed countess couldn't garb herself entirely in black for years on end, traipsing about the city to consort with crystal gazers and mediums, without drawing some degree of attention to herself. Anne had long accepted that she must bear some guilt by association. "Yes, my lady." The footman stepped back for her to enter. "If you would care to wait in the library, I shall see if his lordship is at home." Of course he was at home, in his greenhouse, no doubt. Anne had little intention of actually seeing the man. She nevertheless permitted the footman to show her into the Earl's spacious library while he trotted off to find his elderly master. The twin fragrances of pipe smoke and parchment met her nose. Lemon polish, too, though there was no sign that the maids had done any recent tidying up. The library was a place of spectacular clutter. Bookcases lined three of the walls. Leather-bound volumes on botany, agriculture, and natural history were pulled out at all angles, as if an absent-minded researcher had wandered from shelf to shelf, withdrawing tomes at random, only to change his mind midway through extracting them. The fourth wall was entirely covered in framed sketches of flowers and greenery. Some images were produced in pencil, and others in delicately rendered watercolour. They were, along with the teetering stacks of botanical journals and drooping maps that spilled over the sides of the Earl's carved mahogany desk, evidence of his prevailing passion. Lord March's love of exotic plants was legendary. He'd spent much of his life travelling the globe, from the wilds of America to the highest peaks of the Himalayas, bringing back rare seeds to nurture into bloom. A distracted fellow at the best of times, but a kind one too, as far as Anne recalled. It had been a long time since she'd darkened his doorstep. A lifetime, it felt like. She tugged restlessly at her black kid leather gloves as she paced the worn carpet in front of the library's cavernous marble fireplace. She'd never excelled at waiting for unpleasantness to arrive. Fortunately, she didn't have to wait long. "Hello, old thing." A familiar deep voice sounded from the library door. Anne spun around, her traitorous heart giving an involuntary leap in her breast. Mr. Felix Hartford stood in the entryway, one shoulder propped against the doorframe. Lord only knew how long he'd been observing her. She stiffened. After all these years, he still had the power to discompose her. Drat him. But she wouldn't permit her emotions to be thrown into chaos by his attractive face and figure. What cared she for his commanding height, his square chiseled jaw, for the devilish glint in his sky-blue eyes? And devil he was. The very one she'd come here to see. Hartford, she said. Her chin ticked up a notch in challenge. It was a reflex. There was no occasion on which they'd met during the course of the past several years that they hadn't engaged in verbal battle. This time, however, he made no attempt to engage her. He was dressed in plaid trousers and a loose-fitting black sack coat worn open to reveal the dark waistcoat beneath, a casual ensemble made more so by the state of him. His clothes were vaguely rumpled, and so was his seal-brown hair. It fell over his brow, desperately in need of an application of pomade. There was an air of arrested preoccupation about him, as if he'd just returned from somewhere, or was on his way to somewhere. As if he hadn't realized she was in the library, and had come upon her quite by chance. An unnatural silence stretched between them, void of their typical barb-filled banter. Greetings dispensed with, Anne found herself at an unaccountable loss. More surprising still, so did Hartford. He remained frozen on the threshold, his usually humorous expression turned to stone on his handsome face. At length, he managed a smile. I knew one day you'd walk through my door again. It only took you... Withdrawing his pocket watch from his waistcoat, he cast it a brief glance, brows lifting, as if in astonishment at the time. 7 years to do it. She huffed. It hasn't been 7 years. 6 and a half, then. 6 years and 5 months, more like. It had been early December of 1855, during the Earl of March's holiday party. She'd been just shy of 17, young and naive, and not formally out yet. Hartford had kissed her under a sprig of mistletoe in the gaslit servants' hallway outside the kitchens. And he'd proposed to her. But Anne refused to think of the past. Never mind that, living in London, reminders of it were daily shoved under her nose. You're not going to be difficult, are you? She asked. That depends. He strolled into the room. To what do I owe your visit? Presumptuous as always, she said. For all you know, I am here to see your grandfather. Hartford was the only child of the Earl of March's second son, the late and much lamented moralist Everett Hartford. Anne well remembered the man. He'd been as straight-laced and starchy as a vicar. Rather ironic, really, given his son's reputation for recklessness and irreverence. My grandfather is in his greenhouse, Hartford said, elbow deep in chicken manure. If it's him you've come to speak with, you're in for a long wait. She suppressed a grimace. There was no need for him to be crass. Really, Hartford? Really, my lady? He advanced into the room slowly, his genial expression doing little to mask the fact that he was a great towering male bearing down on her. Why have you come? Anne held her ground. She wasn't afraid of him. I've come to ask a favour of you. His mouth curled up at one corner. Better and better. He gestured to a stuffed settee upholstered in Gobelin tapestry. Pray, sit down. She nimbly sidestepped him to sink down on the cushioned seat. The skirts of her black carriage gown brushed his leg as she passed, silk bombazine sliding against fine wool in an audible caress of expensive fabric. Her pulse thrummed in her throat. She daren't look at him, instead focusing on the business at hand with renewed vigour. Withdrawing her copy of the spirit...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?